The economic damage from Sandy. Is it worse than we thought? From APM, it's the Marketplace Midday Update podcast. I'm Jeff Horwich. It is Friday. Happy Friday, November 30th. New data on consumer spending today. Also a big port strike at the country's most critical port. The LA car show opens. Happy birthday to the Irish bailout. And aside from Mitt, who's got the biggest regrets post-election? Well, it could be the guy with the Romney face tattoo.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
Got some new data this morning with a little bit of a surprise, for some at least. U.S. consumer spending slowed down last month. Household income growth was flat. Now, Superstorm Sandy only caught the very tail end of October, but how much of a factor is it turning out to be? Chris Lowe is chief economist at FTN Financial. Hey, Chris.
Good morning, Jeff.
So what's your biggest takeaway from today's consumer spending numbers?
Well, as economists anyway, we're all a bit surprised by how big the impact was. It's a reminder of just how much commerce takes place in that part of the Middle Atlantic. Income was flat. Wage and salary income actually down 0.2. And the consumption numbers were down 0.3. November's probably weaker still because we lost about 2 days of business in October. We lost about a week of business in November. What it means is that fourth quarter GDP growth could be close to zero, which, again, a lot weaker than expected.
Thank you, Sandy. And change in tack here. Yesterday, we saw markets fall moments after Speaker John Boehner steps out and throws cold water on the prospects for a quick fiscal cliff deal. The indexes did bounce back and finished higher. Are investors, Chris, really standing by, just buying and selling on every little whiff of progress or setback?
They are. And the reason is that if there is a deal, we could have growth of 1.5 to 2% in the first quarter. That's partly because Sandy reconstruction will be going on. If they can't reach a deal, growth could be negative. The difference that implies for earnings is massive, and that means we're going to trade every headline out of Washington until we get a deal.
And we'll keep tracking it, I guess. Chris Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial. Thanks, as always.
Thank you.
And let's do the numbers. Well, markets are trending slightly down over the course of the morning. Currently, the Dow is off about 0.2%, sitting around 13,000. Very, very close to it. S&P 500 is off 0.2% as well, and the NASDAQ is down 0.2%. In Tokyo today, though, news of a fresh stimulus plan from the government sent the Nikkei index up to its highest close in about 7 months. Keep an eye on Zynga today. News broke late yesterday that the online game maker and Facebook are ending their special cross-promotional relationship that helped make Zynga ubiquitous on the social networking site. In the first hours of trading here, Zynga shares are down 8%. It is day four of a strike that has shut down much of the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach. Management is trying to find common ground with striking clerical staff. Dock workers also refuse to cross their picket line, which means not a lot of work is getting done. It's a local strike, but it could ripple across the entire U.S. economy, as Marketplace's Chrissy Clark reports.
Combined, the twin ports of L.A. and Long Beach handle 40% of the nation's imports, mostly from Asia. That includes a lot of those pajamas, toys, and gadgets that might be on your holiday list. On a normal day, the ports move about $1 billion worth of goods. But because of the strike, there are at least 18 ships in the harbor filled with boxes, waiting. Paige Siplon is with Georgia's Center of Innovation for Logistics.
There's a lot of people involved in moving those boxes, a lot of jobs. If the bottleneck backs up because of a port closure, that ripple effect is felt throughout all those other pieces of that ecosystem.
From the trains and trucks that move the boxes, to the warehouses where they get stored, to the retailers where we buy the stuff. But economist Gust Fauché with PNC Financial Services says the holiday shopping season won't be affected too much. Most of that cargo arrived back in October.
This is a fairly light time for shipments, and obviously there are other ports along the West Coast where ships can be diverted.
He doesn't expect much of an economic hit unless the strike drags on. I'm Chrissy Clark for Marketplace.
They say it's never too soon to start saving for college. So starting next fall, one Ohio county will give $100 to every kindergartner who lives there to put toward the college fund. The multi-million dollar program is the largest of its kind in the country. From the Marketplace Education Desk at WYPR, here's Amy Scott.
When it comes to producing college graduates, the Cleveland area trails the rest of the country. Cuyahoga County Executive Ed Fitzgerald says the area also has higher than average poverty.
And those things are not unrelated. So we felt we needed to do something dramatic to try to create a real culture of college attendance.
Research shows a college savings account can actually change a family's aspirations. William Elliott is an assistant professor at the University of Kansas. He found that students with savings are about four times more likely to go to college. When that savings account is in their own name, they're almost seven times more likely.
They tend to have a better sense of control over things, and it helps them engage in school more because they see college then as being open.
That first $100 won't cover much tuition, but if parents contribute $5 or $10 a week, it could add up to thousands by graduation. And Elliot says even a very small nest egg increases motivation. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
For decades now, the story of American manufacturing has been offshoring or outsourcing. Lately, some new terminologies come into vogue, though. Onshoring and insourcing. Companies moving actual manufacturing production back from overseas. For the cover story of the new issue of The Atlantic, journalist Charles Fishman set out to document the economics behind the trend. Charles, good to talk with you.
Thank you. Happy to be with you.
Tell me about the main example that you build your piece around. What's going on at Appliance Park in Louisville?
This is a huge appliance factory. It may be the largest appliance factory in the world. And a year ago, it was down to the lowest number of employees in 50 years. Today, GE is making dishwashers, refrigerators, washers and dryers that were literally made in Mexico or China a year ago. What GE has discovered is that you can actually now make these appliances as inexpensively or even cheaper than overseas.
You say in the piece that not only are we perhaps moving past offshoring in some context, but that in hindsight, moving all these manufacturing jobs overseas might actually have been a mistake. How's that?
10 years ago and 20 years ago, all people did was look at the labor rates in Mexico, in Asia, and see that they could hire 30 people for the cost of one person here, then they just said, great, let's go do it. And they weren't keeping track of what it costs to fly back and forth all the time, how challenging it is to manage manufacturing that isn't in your control and that isn't next door. And it turns out when you ask companies to go back and show the cost savings, they actually can't.
Now, this is a great piece, but I've heard this about the U.S. manufacturing resurgence before. And one response is, these examples are nice, better to gain jobs than to lose them, of course. But in the big scheme of things, it's a blip. We will never return to anything like the manufacturing economy we once had. What do you say?
I think it's a little bit of both. Manufacturing jobs peaked 40 years ago, and we are not going to be back in 1979 territory anytime soon. But what's interesting about what's happening now is this isn't a knee-jerk response. And so I think really smart companies that understand their products and their markets are going to bring manufacturing jobs home. That will slowly increase the manufacturing range and talent here in the U.S. And I think the slow build will mean that most of those jobs are actually sustainable.
Charles Fishman wrote the cover story for the latest Atlantic. It's called The Insourcing Boom. Charles, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
So Mitt Romney, you might have heard, met President Obama for a private lunch at the White House yesterday. Surely kind of a bittersweet invitation for Mitt. But after Romney himself, few folks can perhaps match the disappointment of Eric Hartsburg in Indiana, who at the peak of his excitement and optimism tattooed a 3-inch version of the Romney Ryan logo on the side of his face. Hartsburg is now looking into getting the thing removed, apparently. And I love this quote that he gave to Politico. I'm the guy who has egg all over his face, but instead of egg, it's a big Romney Ryan tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune in to Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
The Los Angeles Auto Show opens to the public today. It comes at an interesting time. The market for cars in the U.S. has rebounded, and the industry is back on its feet, even as the broader economic recovery continues to unfold at a painfully slow pace. In the days before the general public gets in the doors, Jessica Caldwell has already logged a dozen hours at the auto show. She's an analyst from the car website Edmunds.com. Good to talk with you.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
So there's always plenty of flashy stuff at these things, but what trends are you seeing this year that are going to be meaningful for the typical car buyer down the road?
Well, I think what's interesting about Los Angeles Auto Show is that it usually focuses on fuel efficiency, green cars. But what's interesting this year was that green cars came in the package of very small cars, and both Fiat and Chevrolet came out with new electric vehicles in that form. Ford also had a small car, but it was performance oriented. So I think even though we're focusing on green, there's also a need for performance in these smaller cars.
Definitely some of the luster came off of the electric vehicle concept over the past year, but is that still a big thing at the auto show?
Electric vehicles have had a tough time over the past few years. I think price is still an issue for a lot of consumers, as well as infrastructure, a place to plug in your car. So I think a lot of automakers want to come out with electric vehicles, but they're just not finding a market. Of course, in Los Angeles, it's the best market for these types, but not every other city is adopting them quite as fast.
I saw there's a Chevy Camaro Hot Wheels edition at the show this year, and I gather there's something of a boomlet in this kind of special edition vehicle. Can you tell me what's going on with that?
I think with people really wanting a custom type of vehicle, I mean, a lot of people really want that unique statement that says something about their character. These special edition vehicles are appealing to those customers and also for the automakers. If the car is already done and they have to add just a few other things on, it's pretty cost effective. Of course, since 2008, it hasn't been a rough ride for the automakers. And I think, you know, definitely the mood at Los Angeles Auto Show was a bit better than it's been in the past with increased new car sales. And I think when you start to see automakers taking risks and putting out these fun cars, I think it's, you know, a sign that times are, in fact, better.
Jessica Caldwell is an analyst at Edmunds.com. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Jeff.
Volkswagen is, of course, one company at the Los Angeles Auto Show, and they've got a new ragtop convertible Beetle to show off. The German carmaker is the focus of our final piece this week on the current challenges in the European auto industry. Here's reporter Christopher Wirth.
I would say this is where the life of every car starts. This is the press shop.
Meet Bruno Hinnicke. He's well-dressed, a trim handlebar mustache, perfect American accent. The guy assigned to show reporters like me around Volkswagen's spotless auto factory here in Wolfsburg. The town's about an hour outside Berlin. It's where VW was born.
Please watch your step. It's a little bit slippery here.
As other car makers in Europe struggle for their very survival, VW is flourishing.
Last year was the best business year in the history of Volkswagen. We produced a little bit more than 8.2 million cars, and last year Volkswagen was behind General Motors, the second biggest car company.
How has VW beat the odds? Just listen for a word that comes up a lot in Hinnicke's tour.
Worldwide, plants all over worldwide. The only plant worldwide, German engineering, which is famous worldwide.
Volkswagen is really the only car maker in Europe that competes globally. Ferdinand Dudenhofer is an auto expert at the University of Duisburg-Essen in Germany. He says other auto companies in Europe, such as Peugeot and Opel, rely heavily on the sluggish European market. But Volkswagen has sought out economies that are actually growing.
VW sells 30% of its cars in China.
That said, Volkswagen is still growing here in Europe. It accounts for nearly one out of every four cars sold in the European market. Philippe Bourgeois, an analyst at UBS, says VW does that by building a lot of different vehicles on the same basic underbody. Then it's able to sell them at rock-bottom prices.
And at that level of reduced pricing, they're still able to make money.
But other European car makers are losing money fast. Some 10 million jobs in Europe depend on the auto industry, but many auto manufacturers could close. Hujois says in a few years' time, instead of a European auto industry, then there'd only be a German auto industry to speak of. In Wolfsburg, Germany, I'm Christopher Wirth for Marketplace.
Today, lawmakers in Germany approved the latest bailout for Greece by a large majority. That's a relief to those worried about German resolve to continue supporting its struggling neighbors to the south. The vote happened as the European Central Bank won a legal battle to keep some of its internal documents on Greece secret. Those documents could help shed light on how Greece covered up the level of its debt. Here's Marketplace's Stephen Beard.
The ECB won its court victory against Bloomberg News. The US company wants the bank to reveal how much it knew about the mess Greece was in before the crisis erupted. Bloomberg was trying to force the bank to publish internal files. These relate to Greece's use of derivatives to hide the scale of the debts it was running up. The bank successfully argued that publication now would only aggravate the crisis. Olivier Herdman campaigns for greater transparency in Europe. He says the bank's simply trying to avoid embarrassment.
The covering up of the real size of the debt is a very, very controversial issue. And if the documents show that the ECB was aware of what was going on in an early stage, that would be a major scandal.
But the court ruled that for the sake of financial stability, the bank should be able to keep its decision-making process secret. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Greece, Germany, blah, blah, blah. Let's go somewhere a little different before we wrap up our European tour. It was exactly 2 years ago that the government of Ireland got its international bailout. Since that time, on a couple of occasions, we've talked to Father Iggy O'Donovan, a parish priest in the town of Drogheda. He's one of the favorites of my Morning Report colleague, Jeremy Hobson. And on the occasion of the bailout anniversary, he caught up with him again. Here's Jeremy.
Well, when we first spoke to you 2 years ago, right when Ireland was bailed out, here is what you said to us.
We had a mighty party. We have the mother of all hangovers now.
So, Father, how is that hangover feeling right now?
Still pretty much with us. We've had 2 years of, the only word for it is austerity. A big part of our problem, apart from a banking problem, was the housing bubble, the building bubble, in which all our eggs literally went into that basket. And we've let the basket fall, and we're now dealing with the consequences of that. So there's been a lot of suffering, a lot of cutbacks, and the economy is still bobbing along the bottom, very sluggish.
Are you glad that you were bailed out as a country?
Well, I'm not glad that it became necessary, but I'm glad that it happened in the sense that we literally were bankrupt. And luckily, the ECB and the IMF, they came to our rescue, but they are hard taskmasters. They've given us the money, but God, there are stringent strings attached.
What's the economy like now in Ireland?
It's very sluggish. Now, we are getting a lot of praise from the IMF and the European Central Bank. They say that we are confronting the problem, that we have lanced the boil, and that it will be a few years we should get back in on even keel again. Exports such as pharmaceuticals and computer products and all that type of thing is booming. But domestic demand is very poor. Retail is very poor. And as I said to somebody, we're expecting the Grinch this Christmas rather than Father Christmas.
So it's going to be a tough time for the people, for your parishioners then, I assume.
Oh, it certainly is. There's a great brain drain going on with literally tens of thousands leaving the country. They don't see much hope. But as I say, things like exports and so forth are very good. We have a party coming up the coming year, the so-called gathering, where we're inviting our diaspora, many of them American, to come home and bring some of their dollars with them. So at least that much. We were so delighted as well to welcome your president. He was looking for a bit of Irish ancestry. We were glad to provide it.
Put the O in Obama, I guess.
The O in Obama, so that he's become, if you like, our new Jack Kennedy.
Well, so what do you tell your parishioners to give them hope for the future about the economy there?
I suppose it sounds like a cliche, but that what goes around comes around. The long-term prognosis is pretty positive. And as I said, things like exports are booming. So some things are good, but as I said, domestic demand is, retail is where our big problem is. And of course, we've had the mother of all banking crisis because of reckless lending and borrowing.
Father Iggy O'Donovan, parish priest in Drogheda, Ireland, thanks so much. And I guess we'll hopefully talk to you next year.
God bless. Thank you. Happy Christmas.
And wrapping up here, 'tis the season for courthouse Christmas displays and, of course, the controversy that comes with them. In Chester County, Pennsylvania this week, the local minister of the evangelical Pastafarian Church did her best to persuade the county commissioners that the Pastafarians and their God deserved a spot next to the usual nativity scene in menorah.
Something resembling a Christmas tree, but the decorations on it are pasta-themed. And on top is a model of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, which I do have images of.
The proposal was denied. The Pastafarian minister says the request may yet boil over into a legal fight. That is today's Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Jeff Horwich. This is APM, American Public Media.